Mr. James, on Saturday morning at 10:03 a.m., you were observed coloring a picture of a dinosaur. Is that true?
Yeah. Can we go to recess?
Even though your mom had repeatedly asked you to clean up your toys, you disobeyed her and colored anyway?
I plead the fifth.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. James, I hereby sentence you to 15 minutes in the timeout corner.
I'm not going back to timeout!
I'm no scientist, but I think moms play a very important role in society. Without moms, who would drive us to soccer practice? Who else would tell us that it's not okay to eat cupcakes for breakfast? And who else would point at construction workers and say, "That's why you need to get a college education, James"? Oh, and I guess they also give birth to you and take care of you, but like, anyone could do that. Now, before I talk about how I was raised, I just want to give out this disclaimer that my mom is a great mom. She loves me. At least, she used to. If you asked me when I was 15 if my mom was a good mom, 15-year-old me would have said, no. Okay, but like, when I was little, I'd be talking with my friends, and we would be talking about our parents, and they would say stuff like, "Yeah, my mom lets me stay up till midnight, and she lets me play really graphic and vulgar video games. Yeah, my mom doesn't care if I wear clothes with skulls on them, and she lets me eat an entire tub of ice cream for dinner. My mom lets me play with knives." And I used to think that their moms were so much cooler for letting my friends have that much fun. But now, as an adult, I realize the sad truth, that these kids' moms weren't cooler. They just cared about them less. I'm not saying every mom out there is perfect, but a mom who takes the time to make a responsible member of society is pretty high up on the good mom list. Anyways, I love you, Mom, and now I'll immortalize and monetize some of that love. When I was younger and still in need of adult supervision, my mom would take me and my twin sister out to run errands with her. And as you would expect, we were rowdy and wanted to do our own thing. But my mom was prepared for this. She would bring two plastic baggies filled with 10 M&Ms, and every time my sister or I misbehaved, she would eat an M&M right in front of us. And she made sure we saw her eat our M&Ms. She didn't give us a warning either. If we did anything remotely bad, she would say, "Hey, hey, look at me." And I think that parenting technique is the psychological reason that M&Ms are my favorite candy bar.
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
Something me and my sister really liked doing was hiding in those circular racks of clothes that they have set up in department stores. Being in the middle of one of those racks is such a surreal experience. I totally recommend it. But my mom didn't like it when we had fun, so she had to reach her arm in and try and grab us. Do you need any help? Oh, no, I'm just trying to get something in the back. There's a really nice belt that would be great for spanking my misbehaving children! I was spanked as a kid. Nothing too bad. I probably deserved it anyway. I don't remember any specific actions I did that earned a spanking, but I do remember outrunning my mom a lot. Another thing my mom did when I was very little was sometimes when she was washing her hands, she would turn to me and go, "Achoo!" and flick water in my face. It really bothered me, but I never spoke out about it. And one day I just couldn't handle it anymore and I started crying. Why are you crying? But I was too sad to articulate how I was really feeling.
You said you were fucking around my face.
If you ask her about this today, she'll say that she doesn't remember doing that sneeze gag ever, but I remember it. Vividly. So to get back at her, I put a rubber band around the dish sprayer, so when you turn on the sink, it would spray water at you. Come to think of it, I do remember one reason I was spanked. Every time one of my siblings insulted another sibling or told them to shut up, we would have to pay them 50 cents. This resulted in a really weird dynamic when it came to insults. We would get excited when someone called us a name.
Mom, Luke called me a butthole!
That's 50 cents!
Woo! I'm rich!
But sometimes, us kids would just be messing around with each other and we didn't really mean the insults. So we would feel bad taking someone else's 50 cents. Like someone would say, "Hey, James, what's 6 plus 6? And I would say, 9, idiot. And my mom would hear me and say, "James, that's 50 cents. And my sister would feel bad, so she would insult me back and say, "James, you're an unpleasant person." Aw. Swear words cost you $5. That's why I don't swear in videos. But now I can afford it. So, f*** you, Mom. You piece of swear. My mom never washed her mouths out with soap, she wasn't that kind of person, but she did threaten to if we swore. And one time after I said a pretty naughty word, penis, she said, "If you don't behave, I'm going to get the soap." And I said, "I don't care, soap tastes good." "Alright, you big dingus, shove this in your mouth, you won't do it, no balls." So I bit into it and immediately regretted it. Now people are eating soap for views. So I guess we never grow up. Did anyone else's parents put a password on the family computer? Because my parents did, and I didn't know we were the only family that did that. We had a rule in the house that we were only allowed to be on the family computer for however long we read a book for. But luckily, I would just read a book for 15 minutes, get my mom to type in the password, and then she would just forget that I was on the computer and let me stay on for hours. And I played a lot of Neopets in RuneScape. Also, I wasn't allowed to have a TV or a computer in my room, because then I would have easy access to inappropriate animes. When I was little, cell phones were a thing, but my mom didn't let me have one, so I had to talk to all my friends over a landline. I hope I don't have to explain what that is, because that would make me feel really old, and I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life. But basically it meant if I was upstairs in my room talking to a friend, my mom could grab a phone downstairs in the kitchen and just join in our conversation completely uninvited. It didn't matter who I was talking to, I'd be having a conversation like this. I think the reason I internalize and hide away all my problems is because of how invasive my mom is in my personal life.
James, get off the phone and do the dishes.
Mom, I'm on the phone!
Wow, I can't believe you said that to the person who gave birth to you. So what are you two losers talking about?
Luckily, I would almost never be talking to a girl. So at least that didn't happen. This other time, my mom was giving me and my sister a ride to school, and on the radio, she was listening to the worst subgenre of rock music. Christian rock?
Just kidding, you can like whatever you want.
Anyway, we were pulling up to the school, and I told my mom to turn the music down.
What? Why?
Because I don't want people to think I listen to this, Mom. You see, I was in junior high, so I cared a lot about what other people cared about. So she turned the music down, but as we stepped out of the car, she turned the volume all the way back up and blasted the music for everyone to hear.
Jesus, take the wheel!
Looking back at the situation, I think that's pretty hilarious. GG, Mom. These aren't all the times my mom embarrassed me, but those are all the ones I'm going to include in this video. I didn't even mention the time when I was 4 when my twin sister wanted to do ballet lessons, but she didn't want to do them alone, so my mom signed me up for lessons too. But that's a story for another video. Love you, Mom. You made me like this.
I'm terrible at decorating. Not in the sense that I have terrible taste, but rather I'm terrible doing anything. I have this debilitating habit where right before I hang a picture up on a wall, I'll go, yeah, this spot is perfect. I'll just set this on the floor real quick so I remember this is the spot I'm going to hang it up. And then that picture will stay on the floor for 6 months until I finally do hang it up, which takes less than 5 minutes to do so. Sometimes though, I'll get into a home decoration overhaul kind of mood. Like recently, I've come into the possession of 30 Warrior Cat books. Somehow. And instead of putting them in a closet next to my 30 Animorph books, I decided it was finally time to buy a bookshelf and put all of my classic literature neatly on display. After perusing multiple furniture websites and getting overwhelmed with the massive amount of choices and styles and letting my algorithm know I was desperate for a new shelving unit, I had a sudden moment of clarity. I am spending more time thinking about shelves than I've ever wanted to in my entire life. I just need something to hold my cat books. Why am I overcomplicating this? I should check old reliable IKEA. Ooh, this looks nice. The Calyx. Now, I could just pay to have this thing delivered straight to my door. Or I could go on a fun adventure filled with meatballs. The older you get, the more fun going to IKEA gets. Any piece of furniture you can possibly imagine is at IKEA. With a ridiculous name. In my head, this was going to be the quickest IKEA trip of my life. I would eat some meatballs that are so delicious you don't even need spaghetti to go with them. Then I would find my Calyx and take it home. If I had 2 birds right now, I could totally kill them with 1 stone. Or meatball. But if you know anything about IKEA, a quick IKEA trip is an oxymoron. The first red flag that this trip was going awry was that as I was standing in the checkout line with my food on my lunch tray, I couldn't help but notice that even though I asked for the 12 meatball meal, I only counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 meatballs on my plate. Now I had to ask myself an important question. Am I the type of guy who will step out of line, walk back to the server, and say, I don't know how you Swedes count, but here in the States... And before I even finished the hypothetical, I figured, no, I'm not that type of guy. But then, like, more minor inconveniences kept happening. After I completed my incomplete meal, I went to fill up my water bottle at one of those water filling stations. But when I put my bottle in, the flow of water, like, curved to the side. But then when I moved my bottle over to where the water was going, it wouldn't be under the sensor, so I had to do this whole dance where I kept activating and moving my water bottle, and by the time my bottle was half full, I remember thinking, I wish this machine just didn't work. Because then I would just go, oh, guess it doesn't work. But now it's making me work for my hydration. But whatever. This is all just part of the IKEA experience and why it's such a magical place. Right? I skipped grabbing a shopping cart and started blazing through all the neatly designed showrooms that I'm usually a huge sucker for.
Wow. I wish my bedroom looked like a Scandinavian child's bedroom.
I'm not doing any of that today. I had one item on my mind, and that was the one and only, easy to pronounce, Kallax. Now, imagine my surprise when I turned a corner and saw an entire showroom called the Kallax Collection. Maybe if I had been more observant and saw the giant Kallax display at the front of the store, or just looked on the website for two more seconds, I would have learned that Kallax is like the name of a type of bookshelf. And they come in all these different shapes and sizes, and oh no, I'm overwhelmed with choices again. I saw they were also selling these cubbies that could go into the shelves, and I thought, now I gotta get a cart. If you don't know, IKEA is a one-way street. Arrows illuminate the floor, indicating the flow of traffic. And even though I was robbed of a meatball, I was still willing to respect the rules of the road, and I did a full lap around the store. And I'm super glad I put in the work to fill up my water bottle, because this mega store was a lot more mega than I remember. I kept following the arrows, but I swear they were making me go in circles. I am not surprised that there is a never-ending IKEA SCP, because as you walk through a regular IKEA, you definitely get worried that this place will never end. But the real problem going through all the showrooms twice was that it doubled my chances to see a piece of furniture and go, oh, I actually could use that. There has got to be a Swedish word for going to IKEA for one item and then leaving with $1,000 worth of furniture. There was an end table that I swear had a spotlight shining directly on it. I could hear Swedish angels singing. This end table would be perfect for my printer, which is currently on the floor. So after two laps of the showroom, I headed to the giant warehouse to pick up my stuff, and there were these shelf dividers I wanted, which were ironically at the very back of this long shelf themselves. And by this point in my journey, I was kind of done playing by IKEA's rules, so I just climbed up in there and got them myself. What was I supposed to do? Ask someone for help and make them crawl up in there? No. Now, that amazing end table that I wanted for my printer had to be picked up in the order pickup area for some reason. I guess they had it in the super secret employee only warehouse. So I showed the guy my receipt, and my name appeared on a screen along with an estimated time my order would be ready, which was in 10 minutes. So I waited 10 minutes, and the guy never called my name. And I thought, I'm not bothered by this. It was an estimate. It's fine being a few minutes late. Then more time passed. And by this point, it had been 10 minutes after my estimated 10-minute wait time. So I go up to the guy and said, listen, I can let the meatball slide. But did you forget about me? And he was like,
oh, yeah, we're just waiting on someone who can operate a forklift. Do you want me to climb up there?
I added 45 minutes to my quickest IKEA trip to get something I came into the store not originally wanting. I didn't even measure if my printer would fit, so I was kind of taking a gamble there. But good news, it totally fits. So, however, even with all those minor inconveniences I had to deal with, something happened in that IKEA that really stuck out to me and, dare I say, made the whole trip worth it. After I had done my first lap of the showroom and secured a shopping cart, I saw this middle-aged woman with who I'm assuming was her mom in a wheelchair, and she was grabbing all these small items in her bare hands. And even though I had traveled very far for this shopping cart, I asked her, do you need a shopping cart?
Oh, yes, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
I'm doing a voice. That's not how she sounded. After I gave her mine, I did just turn around and went against the flow of traffic to grab another shopping cart. I'm only running on 11 meatballs here. I'm not doing that a third time. But then later, when I was down in the warehouse, I was about to put this big box into my cart when that same woman just so happened to be there and asked, "Do you need any help?" And it made me realize that a simple act of kindness can be so meaningful to someone that it can completely change the type of day they're having. Admittedly, I did end up putting that box back because I realized it was in the wrong color. I'm sorry for making you crawl up in there, Grandma. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in decorating our room or scrolling on our phone that we forget the real world is out there. So go out and do something nice for someone today. It'll make both of you feel a lot better. And if you have any pictures just leaning up against a wall, go hang them up right now. It'll take like 2 seconds.
I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations. Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it. Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had, and you should all go watch it. And I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it alright if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes, because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain. And how do you get that chemical? Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like, to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, "Prove you're not a human, which line is bigger?" Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says, "I'm not finding anything." And then the other guy says, "Well, you know what they say in the archaeology business." And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an harrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it. We'll never know. Where did Caesar keep his armies? Up his sleeveys. Okay, I had to get this one explained to me, but armies is supposed to be your arm, like your body arm, and your armies go up your sleeveys. Get it? Except Julius Caesar wore a toga, so he didn't even have sleeves. And you could just say this about anyone who had an army. Where did Hitler keep his armies? Up his sleeveys! Ah ha ha ha! When you ask someone what time it is, sometimes they'll say, "It's a quarter to blank." And first off, I really hate that way of telling time, because now I have to use math just to know what time it is. Someone will say, "It's a quarter to eight." Okay, so a quarter to eight, well, a quarter is 25, so 8 minus 25, it's like negative 13. Wait, no, we're using time numbers, so a quarter of 60, that's like 10 minutes, so 8 minus 60 over 4, you carry the 2, and oh, it's 8 o'clock now. We usually only say it's a quarter to when referring to whole numbers, but I wish people would use other times, like, "Hey, what time is it?" "Oh, it's a quarter to 8:37. Did you know that mosquitoes prefer type O blood more than any other blood type? Does that mean our blood tastes different? How can mosquitoes sense what blood type we are? Do mosquitoes think we come in different flavors? What if there was a restaurant for mosquitoes and the menus just had our blood types? Are there mosquito snobs? Like one mosquito would say, "Oh, I see you're drinking O negative. Of course you'd like that blood. Everyone likes that blood." I got that whole idea from a conversation I had with Jaden, and I said I was going to use it in my random thoughts video, so I'm just stealing everything from Jaden.
You know what I think would be a funny contradiction? A fedora with a Tumblr logo on it.
Whenever you leave for a trip, people will say, "Drive safe," which is fine. I always appreciate safe driving tips. But when you go flying in an airplane, sometimes people will say, "Have a safe flight." But I literally have no control if the plane flies safely or not. Why are you telling me to fly safe? I should be the one telling the pilot that. Hey, I just wanted to say that a lot of my friends are counting on you, so you better not screw this up. I appreciate the sentiment, but how do I fly unsafe? Maybe go on my phone before we take off, not watch the safety video? Blow the plane up? Why do people care so much about fashion? If I bought some really nice clothes and I go to a party, out of everyone in that room, I'm the only one who can't see what I'm wearing, unless I look down the entire time. I can go to a party and be wearing just a bunch of clown makeup, and as long as there's no mirrors around and everyone plays it cool, I would have no idea that I'm wearing anything. And also, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing, because I look good in everything. I think this whole YouTube thing has given me a confidence boost. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy amount, but it's given me confidence that I didn't have in high school. My parents bought me a Pokemon shirt for Christmas, and yeah, I like Pokemon, but I don't want the whole world to know that. And in high school, I wouldn't have worn any remotely geeky shirt. But now I can go outside and not even realize that I'm wearing my Pokemon shirt. And when I do realize, I usually think, "Huh, that's embarrassing. Ah, I'm the odd ones out, who cares?" When my parents were my age, they already had a child. And here I am, wearing a Pokemon shirt. You know how different states in America will have different names for certain things? Like some states call it pop instead of soda, or how they call it a washroom instead of a bathroom, and apparently in Rhode Island they call a water fountain a bubbler, and everywhere else is just normal. Anyway, once I heard that down south, there's a phrase for when it's raining and the sun is still out. And that phrase is, the devil meeting his wife. Oh, isn't that so sweet? That means anyone can find happiness, even the devil. I love it when we give the devil more innocent and human characteristics. And given how few of times it rains in Arizona, I don't get to use that phrase very often. So already when it's raining, it's like, "Woo, it's raining! This day is gonna be great!" But then when the sun's out, I get to say, "Look guys, the devil's meeting his wife! I hope they're happy together." Unfortunately, I misheard what that phrase was when I learned it. It's not the devil meeting his wife, it's actually the devil beating his wife. So I guess they're not happy together. I was so sad when I learned what it actually was. I don't know who this devil's wife is, but you need to find a new man, dude. And to think, I almost thought of you as an alright guy, Satan. I looked up that saying on Wikipedia, and in Tennessee they say, the devil is kissing his wife. So I guess in Tennessee, the devil's romantic, but everywhere else he just can't stand her. And the worst variation I could find has to be what they say in France. In France, when it rains and the sun's out, they say, the devil is beating his wife and marrying his daughter. Whoa, France! I'd expect that sort of behavior from Tennessee, but not you, France! Why do you have to be so dramatic to describe your weather? I don't want to even know what you call snowstorms. So anyway, those were my random thoughts. I swear I don't do drugs.
Mr. James, on Saturday morning at 10:03 a.m., you were observed coloring a picture of a dinosaur. Is that true?
Yeah. Can we go to recess?
Even though your mom had repeatedly asked you to clean up your toys, you disobeyed her and colored anyway?
I plead the fifth.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. James, I hereby sentence you to 15 minutes in the timeout corner.
I'm not going back to timeout!
I'm no scientist, but I think moms play a very important role in society. Without moms, who would drive us to soccer practice? Who else would tell us that it's not okay to eat cupcakes for breakfast? And who else would point at construction workers and say, "That's why you need to get a college education, James"? Oh, and I guess they also give birth to you and take care of you, but like, pfft, anyone could do that. Now, before I talk about how I was raised, I just want to give out this disclaimer that my mom is a great mom. She loves me. At least, she used to. If you asked me when I was 15 if my mom was a good mom, 15-year-old me would have said, No. Okay, but like, when I was little, I'd be talking with my friends, and we would be talking about our parents, and they would say stuff like, yeah, my mom lets me stay up till midnight, and she lets me play really graphic and vulgar video games. Yeah, my mom doesn't care if I wear clothes with skulls on them, and she lets me eat an entire tub of ice cream for dinner. My mom lets me play with knives. And I used to think that their moms were so much cooler for letting my friends have that much fun. But now, as an adult, I realize the sad truth, that these kids' moms weren't cooler. They just cared about them less. I'm not saying every mom out there is perfect, but a mom who takes the time to make a responsible member of society is pretty high up on the good mom list. Anyways, I love you, Mom, and now I'll immortalize and monetize some of that love. When I was younger and still in need of adult supervision, my mom would take me and my twin sister out to run errands with her. And, as you would expect, we were rowdy and wanted to do our own thing. But my mom was prepared for this. She would bring two plastic baggies filled with 10 M&Ms, and every time my sister or I misbehaved, she would eat an M&M right in front of us. And she made sure we saw her eat our M&Ms. She didn't give us a warning, either. If we did anything remotely bad, she would say, "Hey, hey, look at me." And I think that parenting technique is the psychological reason that M&Ms are my favorite candy bar.
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
Something me and my sister really liked doing was hiding in those circular racks of clothes that they have set up in department stores. Being in the middle of one of those racks is such a surreal experience. I totally recommend it. But my mom didn't like it when we had fun, so she had to reach her arm in and try and grab us. Do you need any help? Oh, no, I'm just trying to get something in the back. There's a really nice belt that would be great for spanking my misbehaving children! I was spanked as a kid. Nothing too bad. I probably deserved it anyway. I don't remember any specific actions I did that earned a spanking, but I do remember outrunning my mom a lot. Another thing my mom did when I was very little was sometimes when she was washing her hands, she would turn to me and go, "Achoo!" and flick water in my face. It really bothered me, but I never spoke out about it. And one day I just couldn't handle it anymore and I started crying. Why are you crying? But I was too sad to articulate how I was really feeling. If you ask her about this today, she'll say that she doesn't remember doing that sneeze gag ever, but I remember it. Vividly. So to get back at her, I put a rubber band around the dish sprayer, so when you turn on the sink, it would spray water at you. Come to think of it, I do remember one reason I was spanked. Every time one of my siblings insulted another sibling or told them to shut up, we would have to pay them 50 cents. This resulted in a really weird dynamic when it came to insults. We would get excited when someone called us a name.
Mom, Luke called me a butthole!
That's 50 cents!
Woo! I'm rich!
But sometimes us kids would just be messing around with each other and we didn't really mean the insults. So we would feel bad taking someone else's 50 cents. Like someone would say, "Hey, James, what's 6 plus 6? And I would say, 9, idiot. And my mom would hear me and say, "James, that's 50 cents. And my sister would feel bad, so she would insult me back and say, "James, you're an unpleasant person." Aw. Swear words cost you $5. That's why I don't swear in videos. But now I can afford it. So, f*** you, Mom. You piece of swear. My mom never washed her mouths out with soap, she wasn't that kind of person, but she did threaten to if we swore. And one time after I said a pretty naughty word, penis, she said, "If you don't behave, I'm going to get the soap." And I said, "I don't care, soap tastes good." "All right, you big dingus, shove this in your mouth, you won't do it, no balls." So I bit into it and immediately regretted it. Now people are eating soap for views. So I guess we never grow up. Did anyone else's parents put a password on the family computer? Because my parents did, and I didn't know we were the only family that did that. We had a rule in the house that we were only allowed to be on the family computer for however long we read a book for. But luckily, I would just read a book for 15 minutes, get my mom to type in the password, and then she would just forget that I was on the computer and let me stay on for hours. And I played a lot of Neopets and RuneScape. Also, I wasn't allowed to have a TV or a computer in my room, because then I would have easy access to inappropriate animes. When I was little, cell phones were a thing, but my mom didn't let me have one, so I had to talk to all my friends over a landline. I hope I don't have to explain what that is, because that would make me feel really old, and I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life. But basically it meant if I was upstairs in my room talking to a friend, my mom could grab a phone downstairs in the kitchen and just join in our conversation completely uninvited. It didn't matter who I was talking to, I'd be having a conversation like this. I think the reason I internalize and hide away all my problems is because of how invasive my mom is in my personal life.
James, get off the phone and do the dishes.
Mom, I'm on the phone!
Wow, I can't believe you said that to the person who gave birth to you. So what are you two losers talking about?
Luckily, I would almost never be talking to a girl. So at least that didn't happen.
This other time, my mom was giving me and my sister a ride to school, and on the radio, she was listening to the worst subgenre of rock music. Christian rock?
Just kidding, you can like whatever you want.
Anyway, we were pulling up to the school, and I told my mom to turn the music down.
What? Why?
Because I don't want people to think I listen to this, Mom. You see, I was in junior high, so I cared a lot about what other people cared about. So she turned the music down, but as we stepped out of the car, she turned the volume all the way back up and blasted the music for everyone to hear.
Looking back at the situation, I think that's pretty hilarious. GG, Mom. These aren't all the times my mom embarrassed me, but those are all the ones I'm going to include in this video.
I didn't even mention the time when I was 4 when my twin sister wanted to do ballet lessons, but she didn't want to do them alone, so my mom signed me up for lessons too. But that's a story for another video.
Love you, Mom. You made me like this.
There are 3 major milestones that every YouTuber can get to. The first is when they get 1 million subscribers. The second one is when they get their content either stolen or reacted to by a big reaction channel. And the third is when there is fan fiction written about them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today we have the first fan fiction written about me. I have done a read-through where I read this fan fiction blind and unscripted, but it kind of took a little too long, and I don't want to sound ungrateful, but it wasn't the best. I mean, the beginning was good. The middle was and you kind of lost me at the end. So I'm only going to be reading part of it and summarizing the rest of it. So let's begin. I wake up crying, knowing that today is the day James is going to be leaving for a camping trip. Why am I so obsessed with this boy? I mean, we're both only 12. Why am I only 12?
This isn't creepy at all.
I shake the thought of him making me go crazy, knowing I won't be able to watch him and make sure he's safe while he's gone. I put on my clothes, walking over to his house, scared that he already left. I move over to the corner of the house, watching him put all of his gear in his car, his white skin shining in the Arizona sun. I look at the trunk of the car, open and filled with gear, and out of pure desperation to always be with James, I quickly run into the trunk of the car, hiding under all of James's stuff.
That's very impressive for a 12-year-old.
My eyes widen, not regretting a thing. I hear the car start before driving off. I get excited before grabbing one of James's duffel bags, opening the bag, and looking through. My eyes widen, seeing James's underpants before taking it. I will cherish this forever, I say, holding it close to my heart. So then we arrive at the campsite, and the stowaway runs out and hides behind a tree, watching me and saying, Now's my chance. He will notice me. But then, for some reason, she falls asleep. She sleeps for the entire day, and then when she wakes up, she goes through my tent and finds all my Axe deodorant. Which, I'm just gonna point something out, I don't like Axe deodorant. Come on, get your fanfictions right. And then she says, Senpai smell. I say with joy, just spraying a little as the scent of James washes over my body. I let out a soft moan before craving more. Then, for some reason, it switches to both of us in school? Like, if you want to write a semi-erotic fanfiction about stalking me, go right ahead. But at least make the story make sense. It's 7th grade, and I have followed my senpai everywhere. I go the look of him driving me crazy with lust every time he talks to a girl, the anger driving me crazy. So then she ties in the part where I give my first comic I made to a girl. Sick reference, bro. So I give the comic to the other girl, and then the girl in the story says, Senpai! But I couldn't get mad at Senpai. I was only mad at the girl, my eyes widen, grinning, following the girl, watching and waiting. So then I think she steals the comic. And then we go back camping? For some reason? Keep your story straight, man! I wake up already knowing James is going to be gone again, on another camping trip. I lurk on top of the trees. What? On top of the trees? A few hours pass before I wake up. You just woke up a few sentences ago! To already find everyone there and unpacked. My eyes widen before seeing James on the cliff, as I scream knowing he could hurt himself. I bite my nails, watching, screaming with each jump. I must help Senpai! Then she ties in the time when I pushed Harris off a cliff in one of my older videos. It was into a lake, okay? I didn't just push him off a cliff, okay? We were cliff diving. Then I think I save her from falling or something, but then she swims away? I start to climb down before swimming far away from the campsite. My only energy is the thought of James, my eyes exhausted in the heat of the Arizona sun. Waiting for my senpai James to show up, even the thought of him makes my heart beat fast. Then we go back to school, for some reason. She tries to fit in as many references as she can. I'm not expecting everyone watching this to have seen all my videos, but there's a reference to my PE video, my 5-hour energy video, my ASMR video. She calls me senpai a lot. A lot. And it ends with, I move back into the closet, closing the door. You will be mine. Whoever made this, can you tell me how old you are? You know I'm almost 20, right? I just need to make sure you're not a minor. For legal reasons. So I cut out a lot of the fanfiction, but the author uses the word senpai 18 times and the phrase eyes widen 10 times. So that's about 2% of the fanfiction is either the words eyes widen or senpai.
For some reason, everybody thinks butterflies are better than moths. We make children's books about butterflies, we use them as metaphors of change. You might be an ugly caterpillar now, but soon you'll grow into a beautiful butterfly. We go into fields and frolic around trying to catch them, and some people even have a collection of them. Granted, the people who do collect them do so by impaling the butterflies. But whatever, it's still a compliment. How many other insects can say that they get this much affection? Maybe praying mantises. Where I come from, every time you see a praying mantis, you have to point it out like, whoa, guys, look, a praying mantis! And then you just look at it. Anyway, back to the point. Moths, on the other hand, are like the white trash versions of butterflies. Even though moths and butterflies are practically the same creature, for some reason we give moths a bad rap. We laugh at them for flying into light bulbs. Butterflies would do that too if they want to sleep at night. Moths are so attracted to bright light that they'll follow it even if it kills them. You might think that this sort of behavior makes them stupid, but I like to think that this just shows how dedicated they can be. We also get mad at moths for eating our clothes, but if butterflies like the taste of our clothing, they wouldn't hesitate to chomp down on our laundry. Actually, butterflies probably think that they're too good for your clothing. They only eat the fine things in life, like flowers. You hear that? Butterflies think they're too good for your t-shirts. In Arizona, we have your normal run-of-the-mill moths. You know the type, small, gray. They look like a paper airplane made by someone who didn't know how to make a paper airplane. But we also have a moth called the white-lined sphinx moth. And these moths are like the Godzilla of the moth world. Which, actually, I'm pretty sure there is a giant moth in the Godzilla world. Mothra. This again just shows how much we don't like moths. We turn them into city-destroying monsters. When will the hate end? I'm sure when they filmed Mothra's scenes in the Godzilla movie, they didn't even use any special effects. They just used a normal white-lined sphinx moth. Those things could beat up hummingbirds if they wanted. One night when I was 5 years old, one of these big boys was hanging around at our porch light, cause, you know, moths, they just love themselves some glowing balls of heat. And then when someone opened the door, the moth saw all the other light inside and just flew straight in. More light?! This place is absolutely glimmering!
Its fate was sealed as soon as it crossed over the threshold.
I don't know what the moth did once he was inside our house, but whatever it was, it sure tired him out. Because the next morning, my sister and I found him on the kitchen windowsill just lying there, doing absolutely nothing. He was probably thinking about the outside world and being with his moth brethren, but he'd pretty much given up trying to escape. Because me and my sister just scooped him up and put him into a jar, and he became our new pet. My sister decided to name him Harry. Now, some moths are actually quite hairy, but this moth wasn't hairy at all. So that name didn't make any sense, but we were five, so it didn't have to.
Hey guys, don't get too attached to Harry.
We poked holes in the lid, we put leaves and sticks in his jar, which might have been a good idea if he was still a caterpillar, but I don't think moths eat leaves. Do they eat leaves? We probably should have just put in a t-shirt. We thought we were taking good care of him. My mom apparently didn't like Harry. She said, I have a good idea. Why don't you take Harry to your kindergarten class tomorrow and... I don't know, maybe he can be the class pet there. This is back when I thought my mom had good ideas, so we decided to take Harry to school, because think of how cool you would be as a 5-year-old showing all your classmates the giant moth you captured. Looking back at the situation, having a class pet whose lifespan that won't make it to the end of the school year isn't a smart idea. The teacher probably didn't want to have to come to school one day and explain to a room full of 5-year-olds why the class pet was lying on its back and not moving. So the teacher suggested, what if we release Harry at recess? Now, a lot of kids' movies that have animals in them, the animals usually don't like being captured. The animals want to be free and live out in the wild. Think Finding Nemo, Spirit, Happy Feet, Free Willy. It was common knowledge to every 5-year-old that all the creatures walking on this green earth wanted to live in the wild. So we were more than happy to put Harry back in his home. When it came time for recess, we all walked outside and were excited to be part of the newly instituted Catch and Release Moth Program. We were like those people who put beached whales back in the ocean. Except, in this metaphor, the whale was already in the ocean minding its own business, and then two dumb kindergartners put it in a plastic baggie and then moved it miles away from its home.
It was supposed to be a happy moment seeing Harry get rehabilitated into moth society. But what actually happened was
a lot darker.
We gathered around the teacher, she opened the jar, but Harry didn't fly out, so then she had to shake Harry out of the jar. We've already established that Harry isn't that smart. Eventually, he finally understood that he was free. The whole sky was waiting above him. He flew upward, wings fluttering, ready to reclaim his moth life. Well, turns out there's a good reason giant moths only come out at night. And that's mostly because of camouflage and the fact that their predators are asleep. Harry had neither of those advantages at our playground in the middle of the day. Not 10 seconds had gone by when a bird from a nearby tree swooped down and grabbed Harry in its beak. Harry was a free moth for a good 10 seconds before his painful, inevitable death. Immediately, the entire kindergarten class began screaming. My sister ran after the bird, demanding that he released Harry. Unfortunately, birds don't listen to those sorts of demands. Am I right, Jaden?
Ari, sit. Ari, roll over. Ari, stay. No. Speak.
So then the teacher had to give us the talk about how nature is a lot scarier than it is in the movies. Basically, the circle of life involves a lot of death. But on the bright side, we totally made that bird's day. He was just sitting in a tree, probably wishing Arizona had more worms, and then boom, free meal. I wonder what I'm going to eat. Whack. For all we know, that could have been the bird's first time eating a moth. I'm sure that bird told all of his bird friends and they totally didn't believe him. Dude, I just caught a moth. Like one of the big ones, yeah. I know they're nocturnal, but it was just flying around in the middle of the day. No, I'm telling the truth. Dude, there were like 30 children who all saw me. Ask any one of them and they'll tell you I caught that moth. I don't remember what happened for the rest of the day during school, but I'm pretty sure we didn't get much done. When we got home, me and my sister tearfully told my mom about how Harry had met his doom. My mom said that she was trying not to cry, but I think she was lying. I don't think she was as emotionally attached to Harry as we were. Harry was only a part of our lives for a couple of hours, but years have passed and me and my sister still talk about Harry. Just randomly in conversation, one of us will ask, "Hey, do you remember Harry?"
Yeah.
And now a random moth that died 15 years ago will be remembered forever in our hearts. If only Harry was alive to see what he would have become. I want to share with you some pictures I've saved in Harry's scrapbook. Here are Harry's baby pictures. Here's Harry's first apartment. And here's the last thing Harry ever saw.
Uncle James, can we play Space Explorer?
Shut up for a second. I'm watching this unnaturally charming preschool show.
Why are you watching a show for babies?
Okay, kid. This show is extremely sophisticated and can be enjoyed by both children and adults. So why don't you shut your ignorant mouth and find someone who actually loves you to play your silly little space game?
Crikey, Bingo! You can't say that to your sister! You have to say nice things! Treat others how you want to be treated, mate!
Oh, I really needed to hear that today. This episode of The Odd Ones Out is called... Are you familiar with the Australian animated preschool show Bluey? If your TikTok algorithm is anything like mine, you'll have seen a bunch of clips of this blue cartoon dog all over your For You page, paired with Subway Surfer highlights. Wow, TikTok, clips of a foreign preschool show? I thought you were supposed to cater to my interests. Let's read some of the comments on these Bluey TikToks, shall we? No shame, I'm a senior in high school, but I watch Bluey religiously, and this episode had me all in my feels. I'd say I had a good childhood, but I binge Bluey because adult life is so stressful and I'm sad, and it reminds me of a simpler time. Bluey is for everyone. I'm literally 27, and it's such a comfort show. Bluey is absolutely destroying me as a teenager who wishes he had this childhood. In my teen years and watching full episodes of Bluey. Watching Bluey high is such a fun time, dude. Huh. You know, to me, I'm just thinking out loud here. It seems like a lot of these comments weren't made by preschoolers. What's going on here? Now, if your brain is anything like mine, you'll be thinking, why is this show about Australian dogs so popular with adults who don't even have children? In fact, why does Bluey have over 5 billion views on TikTok, is searched more than Paw Patrol, Peppa Pig, and Coco Melon, and why is this episode number 8 in IMDb's highest rated episodes of all time? This phenomenon intrigued me, and I was also bullied by a large number of people on my own team to watch the show. So, one day I sat down, put on the first episode, and...
I watched all 141 episodes.
Hang on, James! 141? But there's only 129 on Disney Plus!
Don't worry, my fellow obsessive Bluey fan, we're gonna talk about that later. I work in cartoons, and I've been to furry conventions, so Bluey has always been on my radar of shows I'm aware of. And just from the clips that I saw, I adored the art style, especially the backgrounds.
So much so that my very own background team has studied and taken inspiration from Bluey's backgrounds. Here you can see my backgrounds taking on a more Bluey aesthetic. I mean, just look at the colors, especially their greens. Oh my god! Doesn't just looking at these backgrounds bring a smile to your face? While I was watching the first season, I realized, oh, okay, I see why this show is so popular. Because it's genuinely a good show. We've already established that the show is great to look at, but the voice acting, the sound design, and the music are equally as amazing, so it's also great to listen to. While most, if not all, other preschool shows will hire adults who can sound like toddlers, Bluey gets actual children to voice the actual child characters. Somehow, every Australian toddler in Bluey can be so expressive and emotional. It's impressive that the show got such a talented cast of child actors who don't sound annoying to listen to. Or maybe it's just their Aussie accents that I like, I don't know. The characters have so much personality, and the comedic timing is something I've never seen before in a preschool show. I can't think of a single time Cocomelon has made me laugh this much, or even smile. The four main characters are Chili and Bandit, the parents, and Bluey and Bingo, the 6 and 4 year old daughters. Yes, Bluey is a girl. You gotta catch up, dude. Come on, it's 2023. The show also does not hide the fact that it's Australian. It references multiple Australian locations and animals, they call flip-flops thongs, and they say things like, "Oh, nor!" While some preschool shows focus on teaching kids numbers and letters, Bluey focuses on the relationship of the family and teaches its lessons through the make-pretend games that the family plays. And I want to emphasize how perfect these two parents are. These two are the most patient and emotionally aware parents I've seen ever. There are multiple times where the parents apologize to their kids for, frankly, not even doing anything wrong. The dad is like the most perfect dad role model, okay? Check this out. Bingo was sad that dad didn't get to see the leaf bug outside. She was like,
"Daddy, come and see. Come here, Daddy. Quickly."
But he was too busy playing with Bluey, you know, being a present father figure in her life. And at night, she's all boo-hoo about it, and he kneels down, gets to her level, and apologizes, explaining that he didn't hear her. Now, I don't have any kids, but if I spent my weekend running around with toddlers, and then right before bed, one of them said, "You didn't get to see the ladybug," I would say, "That's okay. I've already seen a ladybug. Good night." In one episode, Chicken Rat, Bingo lost her favorite toy, and Mom asks, "Well, where was the last place you had it?" The two retrace Bingo's steps, and through flashbacks, we see this bizarre day that Bluey and Bingo had. The very first flashback we see, Bluey and Bingo are cooking a chicken rat egg while wearing weird costumes. And through this creative backward storytelling, we piece together what a chicken rat is and how the kids ended up in this situation. It's episodes like that which really make me appreciate the care that went into the show, and really sets Bluey apart from every other preschool show. Most preschool shows stick to a formula and talk down to the viewer, because typically their viewers are short. As a childless adult, I don't want to say, "This show teaches you how to be a good parent," because I don't know how to be a good parent. But on paper, there are lessons in this show that are just as important for the parents to learn. So while watching season one, I got a feel for the world and characters. I started to piece together, okay, this show is depicting perfect parents, it's well written and wholesome, anyone regardless of having kids can enjoy the show. Let's watch the rest, shall we? Season 2 and Season 3 is when things go from 100 to 1,000. This is when episodes cover deep and emotional topics that I think toddlers are too baby to understand. Let's see, there's the struggles of keeping romance in your relationship alive when you have two toddlers to look after, why taking time to play with your kids can have a ripple effect that lasts into adulthood, feeling inadequate as a mom, what it's like having a dad in the army, parents disagreeing on different parenting styles, moms getting tipsy, implied, dealing with infertility, abandonment, potentially a miscarriage, that one's still up in the air, and death. Actually, that one was in season one. You can't even compare Bluey to other preschool shows. Like, what the fuck was Dora the Explorer even doing? Was she even trying to entertain the adults who are also going to be watching her show? Dora had the same formula every episode, and there was a map who sang a song that was just repeating the same three words 14 times. Season 2, there's an episode where Chili is telling Bluey about how when she was a baby, she wasn't crawling or rolling over as fast as the other babies in her mom group, and she compared Bluey's developmental delay to the other babies and felt inadequate as a mother. And then this pink poodle comes to console her, looks directly into the camera, and says, "You're doing great. I'm a he-him male with no kids, and I still get teary-eyed just thinking about that episode." People will tell you that Bluey is a kid's show that adults can enjoy too. No, that episode wasn't for the kids. It was directed at all the moms watching who are doubting their motherhood. When has Cocomelon ever done something like this? All the babies stop singing mid-nursery rhyme, look directly into the camera and say, "Hey mom, just wanted to say you're doing a great job raising me. Keep up the good work." Like, no, that'll never happen. I'm still not done talking about how impressive the writing in Bluey is, okay? So please indulge me for a bit. I'm switching into video essay mode as we do a deep dive into the themes and symbolisms of one of my favorite Bluey episodes, Flatpak. The entire episode is an allegory of human history told from a religious and scientific perspective, respectively. And it touches on the ever-growing relationships between a mother and child, all within 7 minutes. No, I'm not reading too deep into this. Let's begin. Bandit and Chili set out to build a new swing for their porch, and we get this great meta self-aware joke from Bandit when he complains about the instructions saying,
I'm not taking advice from a cartoon dog.
Meanwhile, the girls play games with the leftover packing materials that are thrown into the yard by their parents. Bluey and Bingo are given bubble wrap, which they pretend is water, so they pretend they're fish. Then they're given cardboard, which they pretend is land, so they pretend they're frogs. Then they're given tails and become lizards, then T-Rexes, then birds, then furry little animals. Is this chart starting to look familiar? Then they're monkeys, and then bipedal cave dogs. What? Is that you, Mr. Darwin? Were these girls playing out the evolution of man through a silly game? Now, if you didn't like the evolution symbolism, I know you're going to love the parents being an allegory for the creators. You know, the big guy upstairs, the whatever you believe is going on. The parents supply the girls with their entire world. They give the girls the sea, the land, the volcanoes, and the trees. In these cave paintings the girls make that tell their history, they depict the parents as gods, higher up and in the clouds. They do look a little angry. Perhaps they're still in the Old Testament. The parents being the creators is hinted at again by Chili when she looks at the girls lovingly saying, "Aww,
we made them.
The parents give the girls an Allen wrench, aka tools, and one industrial revolution later, the girls evolve from cave dogs to modern dogs, building futuristic towns and spaceships. Throughout the episode, as the girls go through different stages of evolution, they also go through different stages of their lives as a mother and child. As fish, Bluey says that she's the mommy fish and Bingo is the baby. Then as frogs, Bingo pretends to be a toddler and Bluey teaches her how to catch flies. Then as T-Rexes, Bingo becomes a big girl. Then as cave dogs, she's a teenager. And finally, in the last stage, she's all grown up, ready to traverse the universe on her own. She thanks Bluey for looking after her and leaves on her spaceship. Bluey, now much older as shown by her having to use a cane, crosses the styrofoam threshold which represents her death and she gets to live with her creators. All while this orchestral masterpiece is playing and suddenly you realize you're crying? When did that start? And then Bandit ties the allegory all together at the very end saying, "Ah, this is heaven." Are you joshing me right now? This preschool show was able to tell a clever allegorical story with tasteful religious undertones in how many minutes? Did you just make me feel emotions over a cartoon dog? This isn't the only episode you can make an in-depth video essay on. There are plenty of other episodes that hit just as hard as this one. While I was doing research for this video, it got me thinking about another foreign animated kids show with 8-minute-long episodes that focus on a family of two toddlers. Except, unlike Bluey, this show is universally hated. Caillou, it's Caillou. I had this idea in my head that people only hated Caillou because he was a more accurate portrayal of a toddler. But in the handful of Caillou episodes I watched, I was reminded, oh no, that's why people hate Caillou. Because he sucks! His brattiness isn't even important to the plot, it comes out of nowhere. Caillou will be getting ready in the morning, he spills cat food and says, "Gilbert, look what you did!" He's at the beach and this bird who's done nothing wrong gets told to
go away!
And there's a bunch more examples of Caillou being a whiny piece of shit. And I can't help but think that Caillou's screeching, piercing, whiny voice does not help him be a likable character. I bet real toddlers can be little punks sometimes, but why would you show that in your cartoon and not have him learn any lesson? There's never a lesson learned in Caillou. Since Caillou was a brat all the time, a lot of people, myself included, wondered why Caillou's parents never disciplined or even tried to change his bratty behavior. But after I thought about it, I realized it would be a very weird episode of Caillou if one day Caillou's mom was like, "Caillou, what did you do to your sister?"
"I made her look pretty, Mommy."
"Caillou, that was Mommy's expensive makeup! How many times do I have to tell you not to touch Mommy's things? Come here, you little twit!"
Mommy, why are you hitting me?
"Getting a spanking!"
"Mommy, you're hurting me!"
"I've had enough of you, Caillou! I hate you!"
That kid got what was coming to him.
I don't know, maybe that episode would be cathartic to some parents. Anyways, getting back to the actual best children's show ever, even though Bluey is literally the most mentally intelligent and educational show for the minds of children, teens, adults, and parents, some unnamed mouse company decided to censor some of the episodes on their platform. It's the strangest things that got censored, too. This horse pooping, Bandit getting hit in the groin, Bandit saying the word groin, this hitchhiker is no longer from Argentina, that one's kinda weird, this pretend cat saying it will pretend pee on the curtains, Bandit hinting at wanting to get snip snip down there. Adults, you know what I'm talking about. And the last 10 episodes of season 3, which are some of the deepest episodes in the series, aren't even on Disney Plus. But that could just be a licensing thing, I don't know. I kept waiting for the infertility episode, I heard so much about it, I finally got to the last episode on Disney Plus and thought, oh, okay, they're saving the deepest one for last. Alright, let's do this. And the episode was about the family playing courtroom to determine if Bandit farted. I hope this video convinced you to give Bluey a chance. I mean, you're still here listening to a grown man talk about it, so you gotta be at least a little interested in it. Through its relatable and realistic portrayal of family life, the show has not only entertained, but also taught valuable life lessons to its viewers. The show's emphasis on play and family bonding is so refreshing to see compared to the usual fast-paced, mind-numbing shows aimed at kids. Bluey reminds us all the importance of spending time with loved ones and finding joy in the everyday. And if you still don't want to watch Bluey, have you thought about getting high and watching it?
Thank you all so much for watching this episode of James getting obsessed over something he probably shouldn't be. Did you have a favorite part about this episode? Yeah, that was my favorite part too. Just one quick announcement. My newest Oddballs book is available on my website right now, so if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over and reserve your copy today. It'll be full of new stories and illustrations and will be released on September 6th, and I'm super excited to hear what you all think of it. Anyway, thanks again for watching. Big shout out to my amazing team. They really crushed it this video, and you better be wearing your seatbelts.
Hey, if you're watching this and it's late at night and you have school tomorrow, I'm sorry. Top 10 things that keep me awake at night. Number 10, eating all those sugary snacks before my bedtime. My blood sugar goes through the roof. Sorry, I just can't help myself. I love a good cookie dipped in hot chocolate. Number 9, death and existentialism. Just the thought that one day me and everyone I love will die, and in just 500 years, no one is going to remember me. So what's the point of doing anything? In the grand scheme of the universe, do I even matter? Unless the internet's still around by then. Thumbs up if you're watching this in the year 2516. And also, don't forget me. Number 8, my dogs! My dogs just love to sleep on my bed every night. And you see, I sleep on a twin-size bed, which is a stupid name for a bed that can fit one person. And I'm actually a twin, so I'm allowed to sleep on those. And I'm not on the below average side of the height spectrum, so I cover about 110% of the bed. And if me and my dogs are both cognitive enough to plan something out, maybe we could set up a system. I mean, they're pretty small dogs. I did the math. They should be able to fit. But my dogs have found that the most comfortable part of the bed is right dead center. center in the middle. So I just gotta finagle my way into a comfortable position, and if the dog leans up against you or sits on your leg, then you're obligated by dog law not to move, because you might disturb the dog, and you love them too much to do that. And my bed is right next to a window, so I sometimes open the blinds so they can look outside, and so they're both right next to my face. But then in the morning, if there's another person or, God forbid, another dog outside, then... Jeez, that was a long one. I just like talking about dogs. Number 7. There are as many creatures on your body as there are people on Earth. And you don't want to even know how many are living on your bed right now. Now, is this true? I don't know. I just saw it on one of those fun fact websites. Not too fun of a fact, I think. But not knowing whether or not it's true is even scarier. That means there are probably microorganisms dying on you every second. At least 12 of them have died on you since you started watching this video. But chances are that some of them are probably doing it on your kneecaps, on your eyelashes. Microorganism, more like micro-orgasm. Now, there's two ways you can look at this. One being that there's so many tiny creatures living on me, and no matter how hard I scrub, I'll never be clean. Or, you're never alone. Every night when you hop into that empty bed of yours, you're sleeping with billions of microorganisms. You slut. Number 6. They never caught the Zodiac Killer. I know he was around in the 70s, but if he was in his 20s in the 70s, that means he's only in his late 60s, early 70s right now. He can still be out there. Who knows what he could be doing? Maybe even failing at running for president. Ugh. And also, according to some conspiracy theories, they never caught John Wilkes Booth. Maybe Booth wants to get revenge. Maybe he's had enough and now he wants to run for president. Number 5. Fractals. What are those, you ask? Imagine you're a farmer and you have infinity fence posts to build a closed pen for your animals. And you have to use all the fence posts. And you think, well, first off, that's physically impossible. If I have infinity fence posts, then I can't use all of them because I'll always have more. Hey, while you're complaining and theorizing over there, I just built your stupid pen and it looks like this. This is a fractal, children. It's a closed shape with an infinite... infinite perimeter. What? What? Infinite perimeter? But I can see it. I can measure it. Oh no, shut up. You're not looking close enough. Let's zoom in. Basically, you can zoom up on this pattern forever. That's just what a fractal is. So since no matter how much you zoom up on this shape, it will always repeat itself. The perimeter of this shape, or the fence you use to make it, is infinite. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. Is the area of this shape infinite too? I don't know, ask Vsauce. Doesn't that blow your mind? Number 4. Barcode scanners scan the white spaces in the barcode, not the black spaces. Number 3. Looking on my phone for hours before I go to bed. How many times do you tell your friends over Skype, alright, I'm going to bed now, and then you go to your bed and you pull out your phone and mess around with it for an hour? And I've heard some studies saying, oh, looking at computer screens all day makes it harder for you to sleep, which is probably true. Why do I go on my phone every night? And the sad thing is I usually stop looking at my phone because my battery is going to die. I have a problem. Number 2. The universe is huge. Whoa, do you realize how big space is? Man, we are just a speck in the grand scheme of things. This is kind of getting back to my point that nothing really matters. Did you know that scientists have found a black hole that's 12 billion times larger than the sun? That black hole is about 1,800 light years long. You know, you probably could have lived your whole lives without knowing that. I'm sorry. Before we get to number 1, here are some honorable mentions. And the number 1 thing that keeps me awake at night is... YouTube is not a stable job. Because of how long it takes me to make a video, I can't really give my opinion on YouTube drama. Heck, I'm still working on my Fine Bros rant. So a lot of you probably know YouTube took away some creators' monetization on videos for not being advertiser-friendly, and they weren't even telling them about it. Now, I'm a pretty innocent PG-rated channel, so I didn't get affected by this new change at all. See you later, scrubs! But dang it, if this shows us anything, is that YouTube does not care too much at what's making their website profitable. What's stopping YouTube from saying, hey, we're gonna take 90% of your ad revenue and all your titles have to say YouTube is great in them? And yeah, if YouTube makes bad business decisions, then they'll be out of business. But so will I. So that keeps me awake at night.
Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web? Remember how it made us a lot of money? Wait, didn't we already have this conversation? Yeah, we did. But we're remaking this conversation with better graphics and Will Smith.
Yeah.
But why would we remake something that's already good on its own when we could be making something totally original?
Because, Ethan, we don't want to take risks, and this will make us more money.
But won't it be obvious to the audience that we're only doing these remakes for the money?
They'll watch it anyways.
I don't want you to think that I think that all sequels and remakes are bad. One of my favorite movies is a spin-off, and I'm very excited for the remake of The Dark Crystal to come out. And if you think I'm going to make a video talking about it when it comes out, you are absolutely correct. So Disney is remaking a bunch of classical movies into live action. They did it with Tarzan, Alice in Wonderland, and they did it with 101 Dalmatians twice. And as someone who enjoys cartoons a little too much, I think it would be cool if they remade Treasure Planet or Atlantis into live action. Both of those movies are underrated and have a lot of high-stake action-packed adventure that would be perfect for a reboot. And if they did get a reboot, it would introduce a new generation of kids to these awesome movies. But that's just my opinion. I'm sure Disney has good reasons for making sequels and spin-offs. Speaking of Disney sequels, I bet some of you forgot the very old straight-to-VHS Disney sequels. I try to forget about them every day. You can have your own opinion on the Disney sequels, but all the ones that went straight to VHS are terrible. Even The Lion King 2? That one emo lion was kinda hot. Did I stutter? I know all those sequels were technically done by a different studio, but let's just hope that Disney will finally break the bad sequel streak with Frozen 2. Or they should just let it go straight to VHS. Some franchises like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings have long overarching stories that are designed to have multiple installments, and as long as the studio doesn't stretch out one book into three movies, then those types of movies are absolutely fine. But I don't want to talk about those movies. I want to talk about sequels to standalone films. Now, I believe that a sequel to a standalone film can be done, but it's a delicate process. Because in the first movie, you establish the characters and the world they live in, then the protagonist has to overcome a problem, usually defeating a villain, and then the characters live happily ever after, and the story is all wrapped up nicely with a bow, and just what a nice story we got there. I'm just gonna set it down and watch it from time to time and not change it one bit. But then a sequel comes along and says, oh, you thought the characters lived happily ever after? And then rips off the nice bow and says there's another more evil villain who wasn't mentioned in the first movie for some reason. If a sequel turns out bad, it can devalue the original movie. There's a reason we don't talk about Atlantis 2 or Pocahontas 2. Or Mulan 2, or Hunchback 2, or Aladdin 2, or Cinderella 2, or Beauty and the Beast 2, or Tarzan 2. Because they didn't happen. So that's why I'm always impressed whenever a good sequel is made. And a studio that I think does an amazing job at making sequels is called DreamWorks. But I've noticed a pattern with DreamWorks franchises that I've coined the DreamWorks Trequel Paradox. I think the right word might be trilogy, but I'm just going to say trequel. You see, DreamWorks has a track record of creating amazing sequels, but pretty subpar trequels. Here's what I mean. Now, keep in mind that these are not my opinion. These reviews are objectively correct facts. And also, I just want to say I know that these movies are kids' movies, but I like animated movies more than real ones. And I'm a cartoon character, so Shrek 1. Great movie, great characters, great message, 10 onion layers out of 10. Shrek 2, it's the first movie in history to be better than the original, and it created the best music video of all time. I need 11 heroes out of 10. Shrek 3?
Not in my swamp.
Okay, I know we might not all agree, but here's another example. Kung Fu Panda 1, perfect movie. Any movie with anthropomorphic animals is always a win in my book. I think we have a best-selling franchise on our panda paws. Kung Fu Panda 2, just as good as the original. How many sequels have an animated bird as a villain? Besides Stuart Little 2. So far, we got 10s across the board, but then Kung Fu Panda 3 comes along and... I'm sorry, Jablinski, I just wasn't feeling this one. Which is why I was so worried for How to Train Your Dragon 3, and let's just say the DreamWorks Trequel Paradox didn't break its trend. However, there's one franchise that doesn't follow the DreamWorks Trequel Paradox, and it haunts my dreams... works. And that franchise is Madagascar. I remember loving this movie as a kid, and apparently I wasn't the only kid who enjoyed it, because it made $193,595,521. So DreamWorks made two more of these movies, and created The Thing That Haunts My Dreams. Now, personally, I don't really care for these movies. They're fine. I haven't rewatched them at all, so 5 out of 10. But there's another movie in this franchise. A movie that shouldn't be as good as it is, and honestly, I'm a little embarrassed to admit that it might make the list of my top 5 favorite movies.
I don't think enough people are talking about this movie, so I'm going to be the one who breaks the ice. That metaphor is relevant because we're talking about Penguins of Madagascar. Penguins of Madagascar is the best movie that features penguins ever. Better than Happy Feet and Happy Feet 2, and it's 1,000 times more realistic than March of the Penguins. There's a scene where the penguins fall off an airplane and go hopping from one airplane to another. It's so entertaining, and it's all done in one continuous camera shot. So I'm not talking with a hint of irony when I say that this scene is a cinematic masterpiece. I don't remember when I first watched Penguins of Madagascar. It came out when I was 18, so I'm probably not the target demographic. But I remember after watching it thinking,
wow, that's a good movie.
And I didn't think about that movie again until years later on Halloween night 2018. I was in a Discord call with some friends who were also spending their Halloween night behind a computer, and naturally we were discussing which Madagascar sequel was better. Some people actually liked the second one, which was surprising, and I said, well, no matter what you think of the sequels, at least we can all agree that Penguins of Madagascar is better than both of them, right? And everyone in the call was like, what are you talking about? And instead of watching a scary movie that Halloween night, we all virtually watched a movie about penguins together, and I think everyone liked it. Okay, let's talk about another studio, Pixar. Pixar movies do a good job at appealing to a wide audience. Kids like them because they're a cartoon, and adults like them because of their heavy themes like old people dying. Almost every movie Pixar has made has been a cinematic classic. Penguins of Madagascar, however, is not one of those emotionally inducing movies. It doesn't teach a thought-provoking life lesson. It's an hour and a half of penguins fighting an octopus, and I love it. Every morning when I watch Penguins of Madagascar, I feel like a kid again. I am jealous of the writing in this movie. Okay, there's one fart joke, but that's my only complaint. Now, do I think Penguins is better than all of these Pixar movies? No, definitely not. But I do think this movie is really good, and IMDb gave it a 6.7 when it clearly deserves a 10. I don't know if this video convinced you to watch Penguins of Madagascar, but if you're retroactively looking for the next summer blockbuster movie to watch, then it's got my recommendation. James, are you being sponsored by Penguins? I wish. There wasn't really a point to this video, I just wanted an excuse to talk about my favorite DreamWorks spinoff. So, in conclusion, I'm really excited for The Dark Crystal 2 coming out on Netflix. The show's being released on August 30th, which is coincidentally this channel's 5-year anniversary. So don't expect me to work that day.
You probably don't know this about me, but I am actually an Eagle Scout. And to be an Eagle Scout, you have to do scout stuff like go camping. And over the summer, my troop would like to travel to a place called Camp Geronimo, where we would live in the wilderness for 7 days. There are about 30 other scout troops that would come, and there were no cabins at the place. We had to sleep in tents. My first year at camp, my friend TJ and I just met the minimum age requirement to go. Yes, it was the same TJ from the first video, and being the good friends that we are, we decided to share a tent for the whole week. It's not weird. We were in the wilderness. We shared for survival. But we quickly learned that we weren't protecting ourselves from bears or anything. We were protecting ourselves from the older kids. You see, there is a perfect linear function based on your age versus how cool you were. And TJ and I were obviously not cool. So about 3 days into camp, someone thought it would be funny to take a can of Axe deodorant spray, tie down the button thing that sprays the Axe, throw it in our tent, and then zip the tent flap shut. This horrendous act is actually a very common prank among Boy Scouts called axe bombing. Eventually, I had to go get something from the tent, so I opened the flap thing and I was just hit with this wall of awful smells. You think boys like the smell of axe? Nah, that stuff's friggin' gross. I'd never experienced the heinous act of axe bombing in my whole life until then. But this wasn't how I wanted it to happen. I immediately got mad, like super pissed. I went up to TJ, grabbed him by the shoulder, looked directly into his perfect face and said, TJ, someone just axe bombed our tent. And TJ just shrugged and went, you know what? Whatever. There's no reason to get mad. It won't help us. And TJ's response to this has actually stuck with me. I think about what he said whenever I'm stressed out about homework, or if my computer crashes and I lose all my files. It really helps calm me down. But as a 12-year-old, I said, Psh! Okay, TJ, you do you. I'm gonna go get revenge. But I had no idea who actually axe-bombed our tent. And whoever did is still a mystery to this day. But I decided to blame the 15-year-olds, with their stupid, guilty faces. I even asked them just to be sure. Hey, did you axe-bomb my tent? No. Okay, I knew it was them. And the 15-year-olds were pretty cool, but not the coolest. There still were the oh-so-famous 16-year-olds. So to help prove that they were still cool, they built a mega tent out of logs. And tent is probably an understatement for that thing. They had logs tied around trees, 5 walls, a back and a front door. It even had a log roof that some boys could stand on. And all the 15-year-olds slept under it every night. And I came up with a perfect plan to get my revenge. Sorry, I have to turn this into a 2-part thing. So anyway, thanks for watching. You can see 2 of my other videos that I've made, or a whole bunch of funny comics at my website. I mean, I'm not just gonna ask you to like, favorite, subscribe, and comment, but if you do wanna do that, you could.
Now, you might think that since I'm making a part 2 of this, I must get recognized a whole lot, like I'm some sort of celebrity or something. No. What actually happens is that I'm awkward, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but chances are you're awkward too. So when I do get recognized, we're both being awkward, together. And that stuff makes for great videos. Once you get to my level of YouTube fame, whenever I go out in public, I always have a thought in the back of my mind, I wonder if any of these people have seen me pour sprinkles over my shirtless body. I especially get worried when I see my target demographic in public. Little boys. This might be paranoia or anxiety, but I swear, sometimes little boys will stare at me for an uncomfortable amount of time. And I'm just trying my best not to make eye contact. You know, I don't really have any defining physical characteristics that make me stand out. As of right now, little boys have to look at me and think, is that tall, white, dirty, blonde-haired, early 20-year-old beta male that one YouTuber I like, or am I just imagining things? It's funny I call myself the odd ones out when I'm part of, like, no minorities. I mean, I might get nervous around little boys, but when I do get recognized, it's the highlight of my day. So I don't know what I'm worried about. I should just wear a shirt that says, hey! And the odd one's out. So one time I went to Walmart and I was buying a bunch of whoopee cushions for my April Fool's video. And as I was walking down the aisle, I saw this little boy at the other end walking towards me and his face just lit up. And I thought, oh, this kid knows! This is happening, ladies and gentlemen! Here we go! Are you James? Who? And then I walked off. I'm just kidding. I mean, I did say who, but I didn't walk away. I was just messing with the kid. It was probably really weird for that kid to see a YouTuber in Walmart buying nothing but whoopee cushions. So that was fun. This other time, I was buying supplies for my 3 million sprinkle video, and I ended up going to 3 different stores. Hey, do you guys have an inflatable pool? Yeah, what size do you need? Enough to fit 3 million sprinkles. What are you using it for? I need it for a thing. So after I finished my important business errands, I felt a little hungry, so I decided to buy some pre-made food. I work hard, dang it, I deserve it. And I decided to go eat at Zupa's. Zupa's is a pretty good restaurant. They have sandwiches and soup, and they give you a chocolate-covered strawberry with every order. I'm telling you this because I want them to sponsor me. I went up to the counter, and there was this employee that said, hey man, what's up? And this is gonna be a bit of a tangent, but I just wanna say that I absolutely love that kind of employee. It's so much better than those fake fast food employees. Do you know the ones I'm talking about? Like, every time I pull up into a Chick-fil-A drive-thru, there'll be an employee that will say, it's always a great day at Chick-fil-A. My name's Mackenzie. How may I serve you? And I just want to say, Mackenzie. I came here yesterday and Brian said the exact same thing. I know your manager told you to say that. Look, neither of us want to be here, okay? No one says it's a great day at Chick-fil-A, okay? That's so dumb. So stop lying to me and give me the usual. Like, I would much rather have a fast food employee just say, what do you want? Okay, maybe not that rude, but you get the point. So now there's a random guy who works at Zupa's who doesn't even know I put him in a YouTube video, but I like his work ethic. Treat me like a person and not like a customer. Anyway, tangent over. I ordered some soup and a sandwich. Cool. I go up to the cash register. My soup is ready, but my sandwich wasn't. The girl said, did you get anything else or just soup? I said, no, I got a sandwich too. I paid for the food, but the sandwich still wasn't ready. I checked my phone, looked at Twitter. By now, the sandwich was done. The girl took the sandwich and the soup and a chocolate-covered strawberry and put it in a plastic box doggy bag thing. I was super hungry. I thought the transaction was done, so I grabbed the box and started sliding it towards me. Then she took out a plastic bag and said, "Oh, do you want it in a bag?" And I thought, "Yeah, I do." So I slid the food back over, and as this girl was putting the food in the bag, she yelled,
"James!"
And I was not ready for that.
"Oh, hey, I mean, who?"
She said, "Did you come here because of my email?"
"You sent an email?"
So that was pretty fun. All the other employees were like, "Wait, this guy's important? There's a high chance that this woman is watching this video right now, and I looked up her email, and her name is Scarlett. Isn't that a nice name? So Scarlett, if you're watching, can you tell your coworker I like his work ethic? Also, can you hook me up with free Zupas?" I never really understood how people could get nervous talking to me. I'm just some 21-year-old who likes M&Ms and drawing cartoons for the internet. I've always thought of myself as a pretty normal guy. At least, I never understood that sort of nervousness until I met Carl Sagan 42. I recently got into this game called Mario Maker, which is a game where you can make your own Mario levels and share them with the world via the internet. I wanted to find some Mario Maker Let's Players that were, one, good at the game, and two, weren't screaming every 10 seconds, which is actually a lot harder to find than you might think. But I went searching and I found these three Let's Players who mostly play Mario Maker, and they're alright at the game. I mean, they're only a little better than me. If one of my videos gets delayed, you could probably thank these three because I'm watching their videos instead of working. Also, this is gonna sound weird, but every morning after I wake up at 12, I pour myself a bowl of cereal and I watch one of their videos. So I start my day off with my Mario Maker boys. Anyway, one of the Let's Players, Carl Sagan 42,
Mushroom,
was going to Phoenix Comic Con, which was great because I was also going to Phoenix Comic Con. I didn't have a panel or anything, I just went with Jaden and her friends and we just walked around. Comic-Con was a lot of fun. I met up with a lot of people. I even got recognized at Suabway. One of the workers knew me. There is this room where you could play video games, and I went up to this one kid playing Super Smash Brothers, and I said, "All right, dude, let's do this." And he said, "I feel like I know you from somewhere." Okay. And then I totally wiped the floor with him with Kirby, and he was like 12 years old. So I had a fun time at the con, but I also wanted to meet Carl. Now, Carl wasn't going to the con because of his Mario Maker skills, but rather he was going because he's actually a scientist who studies vaccines and plants, and he was going to talk about that. So on Friday, after doing some stalking on Twitter, I found out that he had a panel at 9 p.m. Yes! Leading up to the panel, I realized that I was getting my information off a tweet and not from the official Comic-Con handbook, so I didn't even know if I was going to the correct panel. When 9 p.m. rolled around, I walked into the room Carl said he was having his panel. I saw a group of 5 people sitting on a stage, but I didn't see Carl. Guess he's not here. Oh wait, he is here! He's just the only person in cosplay! That's the guy I like! The one in the wig! As I listened to his panel, I kept telling myself that Carl was just a normal person like me. He plays Mario, I make cartoons, I shouldn't be nervous to talk to him. Why am I like this? The panel was great, everyone enjoyed it except for this one woman who I think was anti-vaccine. Once it was done, the panelists stayed around for a couple of minutes and I went up to Carl and I said, "Hey, I really like your Mario Maker streams." And since he talked about vaccines, I showed him this comic I made back in 2014, which I will read now. "Hey folks, are you tired of hearing this? Can you believe all the horrible things doctors put in vaccines? There's no way I'm vaccinating my child. Well, suffer no longer with the anti-anti-vaccine. The anti-anti-vaccine will stop anyone from thinking vaccines are harmful or cause autism." And then he injects the anti-anti-vaccine into the person, and then he flops over. "Is he okay? No, he's dead. Vaccinate your relatives today." It's dark, yes, but Carl liked it, and he even said that AAV is a name of a virus, so vaccine is actually a virus. Well, actually, vaccines are viruses, so. The anti-vaccine lady was behind me, and I think she wanted to talk to Carl, so I said, "Okay, I love you, bye," and I left Carl to deal with her. Some of you might be wondering why I didn't say, "Oh, also Carl, by the way, I have 3 million subscribers on YouTube." Well, because I think that's rude. And I didn't want to flex too hard. I mean, if he did ask about my sub count, I totally would have told him, but I don't know, I just didn't want to brag. I tell you this story because I understand that people might get anxiety talking to someone they look up to. And just because I have more subs than someone doesn't mean I won't get nervous talking to them. Senpais can have senpais too. I wonder who Carl's senpai is. Then 2 days later, I tweeted out to him and he followed me back and we're BFFs now. Now guys, don't embarrass me in front of Carl, okay? Don't just go to his channel and comment, "Who's here because of the odd ones out?" Because no one cares, alright? If you have to comment, comment, "Wow, great video, Carl. You're an awesome person when it comes to Mario. You just jumped right into my heart." And also, you can check out the other two that I mentioned. They're pretty good, too. So, in conclusion, is it cool to be recognized? Yeah. Will I ever get tired of it?
Who knows?
As some of you may know, Jaden has already made a video about the Scribble Showdown tour me, her, Domix, Ross, and Aaron went on in 2019. But we toured again, baby, last November! We were scheduled to go earlier, but then something came up. For this round of touring, we did more than double the amount of shows than last time, so that means this video will be twice as good as Jaden's. So, touring during a global pandemic was a lot of fun. Anytime we had a day off, everyone on the crew had to take a rapid test, and people coming to the shows needed a proof of vaccine to get inside, and worst of all, we weren't able to say hi to people after the show. I know a lot of people waited outside in the cold for us to come out, only to see us at a distance load ourselves into the bus in our PJs, going, "Sorry! We're not allowed! We have to stay in our bubble!" Before the tour even started, we had a big problem. Domix couldn't get his Canadian visa approved to come work in the US, so he was unable to tour with us. But luckily, we found a sub for Dom, someone who loved maple syrup just as much as Dom and was willing to drop everything and tour with us for a whole month, Emily from the channel Emmerichu. And she killed it on stage. Like, straight up murder. She was super funny, artistic, and she drew these awesome pictures of all of us and just... I'm not crying, shut up! When Ross met Emily, the very first thing he said to her was, "Hello, touring's going to be so fun. Just don't sleep the wrong way on the bus, because if it crashes, you'll break your neck and die painfully. Also, you're not allowed to poop on the bus." I would know. Fortunately, no one pooped or broke their neck during the whole tour. And I still haven't pooped. Your body adapts to crazy things. During the last tour, Ross couldn't control his bowels, but this time he couldn't control his brain. He had what he describes as intense, debilitating nightmares that felt like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack was added to the experience. And if you want to hear more about what Ross's twisted mind thought up of when he was unconscious, then go check out the video he made on his channel. But not now, because I'm talking. So, on this tour, I wanted to be better at taking photos. You know, the reason I don't have a vlogging channel is because I forget to film anything that happens on my trips. And as I was taking a photo of a venue, I found out that my phone could do something called Photosphere. Photospheres are full 360-degree photos that show you everything at every angle. Here's a picture of the venue, and here's what the ground looked like. They're the superior way of taking photos. I took a photosphere of every venue. Hey, you know what else is round and cool? That's a great question. It's the type of question we got asked in our VIP Q&A panel. Before every show, the five of us would go out and do a Q&A panel for the people who bought VIP tickets. And 93.75% of the Q&As were absolutely fine. One time, someone asked a question that was directed at their fiancé, and it was, "Will you marry me?" Oh, I'm gonna take a photosphere of this. Hold on, you'll need to stay still for like 2 minutes. I wish that question was directed at me. I would have loved to kiss someone on tour. Anyways, one of the cues we got was a little odd. I'm not gonna tell you which show this was at, but it was in Florida, because of course it was. There was one guy in the audience wearing a suit who was reaching his hand so high up that his butt was out of his chair and he was visibly shaking with excitement. So given how urgent this guy was being, Aaron called on him, but now we know not to call on those types of people. You in the suit. The guy stands up screaming, "Yes! Thank you!" And he goes on a long-winded explanation saying, "Look, I'm 26 years old. I'm not getting any younger. I want to do what you do." Okay. What's your question? My question is that I want to make a bet with all of you that in 1 year I'm going to be up on stage with you performing at Scribble Showdown. I wanted to say, "I bet $1 million because we're not holding auditions." But instead I said, "I love your enthusiasm. That's great. But don't quantify your success into a certain time frame, because that's only going to set yourself up for failure. Especially on the internet, growing an audience takes time and luck. Nothing is ever guaranteed." And we told him good luck and started answering other cues. And then at the end of the Q&A, as we were walking off stage, the guy screamed out, "See you in a year!" And that made me upset because he didn't listen to anything I just said. To his credit, he'll definitely be remembered. Not in the way he wants to, but remembered. And he's coming on tour with us next year, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. Another fun fan interaction that happened was in the freezing state of Chicago. We arrived in Chicago a day early, so me and Emily decided to walk to The Bean.
Now, I have been told that The Bean is not called The Bean, and the artist actually wants it to be called something else. So as we walked up to The Bean, I kept chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." I took some photospheres, and as we started to leave, we passed another group who were chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." And I thought, wow, those guys are annoying. But then they made eye contact with me through the bean's reflection and were like, "Oh my god, are you James?" And I said, "Who?" And then someone saw Emily and said, "Oh my god, it's Jaden!" And I started laughing and I pointed to my Scribble Showdown jacket. "No, no, no, it's this one, not this one, this one." But I don't think they understood because when we were taking a group photo, one of them said, "Jaden should go in front." And I said, "Yeah, Jaden, come over here." So on the last tour, Aaron had just gotten into Magic the Gathering, which is a card game I've been playing longer than him. Back then, I had to explain some of the rules and show him the pro gamer strats. But during 2019 to 2021, Aaron got really into Magic. He knows the name of every single card and what it does. Like, I'll pull a card from a pack and he'll be like, "Oh, nice, Branching Evolution. That's like a worse doubling season. But you could combo it with the Colossal Dreadmaw and the Truffle Mixer. No, the Truffle Mater and get Gary out in turn 5. Gary's what the community calls the Gray Apostle." What? At one of the venues we stayed at, I noticed that there was a random 2 of diamonds glued to the ceiling. So I says to Aaron, "Hey Aaron, say a card, any card."
7 of clubs.
No, lower.
3 of clubs.
Lower.
2 of clubs.
Okay, now change the suit.
2 of diamonds.
Now, you chose that card, right?
Okay.
Look up. What? But then Aaron bought a deck of playing cards and performed a card trick that forced someone to pick the 2 of diamonds, and then Aaron would tell them to look up saying,
"Is that your card?"
What? And because of that, Aaron started to learn other card tricks and would try them out on people. So I don't want to take any credit for Aaron's hobbies, but I totally got him into Magic, and I got him into Magic. While we were on tour, we got invited to be a part of Jacksepticeye's hashtag ThankMiss livestream that was raising money to build homeless shelters. And on stream, Aaron had this crazy idea that if we reached our goal, he would kiss one of us. And then we reached our goal, and then nothing notable happened. If this show sounds like a lot of fun and you want to come see all of us play drawing games live, and you live in Europe, then great news! We have a Europe tour scheduled for April. Get your tickets on the Scribble Showdown website, and next time we plan on touring in the States again, I'll let you know. But for now, thank you everyone who came to a show, unless you live in Brooklyn. Thank you all for watching, and thank you everyone on the Real Good Touring team who babysat us for a month and made this show possible. Touring with you was a blast. And now, I'm going back to sleep on my tour bus coffin, facing the correct way while repressing my urge to poop. And golly, I sure do hope I don't get any nightmares. Right, bunk buddy Ross? Ross?
I haven't slept in 11 days.
All right, James. Are you ready for this?
I was going to say, that's only happening one time.
Down! I'm crazy! Ah!
Science fair. I was talking to a friend saying, "Oh, I know, I can do a video about the science fair and, you know, talk about how much it sucks." And she said, "Oh, at my school, we didn't do the science fair."
What?
That got me wondering, did other people not do the science fair? So I did my own science experiment on Twitter. I ran a poll and asked you guys if you even did the science fair and whether or not you enjoyed doing it. And 58% of you said you didn't have to do the science fair. Like, that was way more than I expected. That's the majority. I've renamed this group of people the lucky ones. And when I asked if you enjoyed doing it, 21% of you said you did enjoy it, and 21% of you said you didn't. I know Twitter polls aren't the most accurate sources of data, but I think it's safe to say that this is a pretty split issue. Now, I'm in the 21% of people who didn't enjoy the science fair. And don't get me wrong, I love science. Well, okay, that might not be true. I really hated biology and chemistry. That was just a mess. But physics was okay. Maybe I don't like science. I just like space and watching these. Bill and Neil, they're my buddies. Except Neil did hurt my feelings one time. We'll get back to that later. Alright, so let me briefly go over what the science fair is for you lucky ones who didn't have to deal with that. Apparently, it's a very American thing, right guys?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we started doing them, I want to say around 4th grade, and we would do this every year up until the 10th grade. The whole class would spend all day researching a topic that interests them, and then we would have to come up with a question that we could run an experiment on. An example of these questions are, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? What color light produces the most heat? How does the shape of a rocket's fins affect its travel? All of which are projects I did. Basically, this was supposed to teach you about the scientific method, but what it really did was teach us how to procrastinate and make up data. And on paper, you might think, oh, that sounds like fun. I wish my school did the science fair.
No!
Here are some flaws with the science fair. First, you got the option to work with a partner. And of course, you want to work with a partner so you can split up the work and not do as much. Now, since I didn't have any friends, I would partner up with someone that no one else wanted to partner up with. But they wouldn't do any of the work. I only did the science fair with a partner once. From fifth grade on, I did my science fair projects alone. The second problem is that we had to come up with a question all on our own. And you gotta understand, we were just kids. We don't think as cognitively as scientists do, okay? Just a couple years ago, we still believed in Santa Claus. Except for me, my family didn't do Santa Claus. And now you want us to wonder if the ratio of a cylinder will affect its buoyancy? Like, come on. And also, we don't have access to any resources. You know, the science fair is a lot like an episode of Mythbusters. But what sets apart the Mythbusters from your average fourth grader is that they're really smart engineers who have access to explosives, while we can't even drive to Walmart ourselves. We have to ask our parents to take us. One year, I wanted to do an experiment on a certain type of soil, so I did research, I wrote everything all up, but then when I went to Home Depot to buy the soil, they didn't even have it! So I had to pick a new topic and start all over again. Now do you see why I think the science fair sucks? So okay, I think it would have been better in elementary school if we were assigned a question. I know the whole point of these things is about discovery, but we're all stupid, okay? I guess if you were anything like me and you chose a crappy question, you'll have a bad science fair. My very first science fair, after all day researching possible questions, me and my partner came up with a question: what time of the day is the hottest? Now, I already know the answer to this question, and in fourth grade, I'm sure I already knew the answer to this question too. It's noon. Like, I don't need to run an experiment on that. In fact, I can just go to Google and seriously just type weather and boom, there's my data right there. No need for an experiment. But the science fair isn't just finding the answer to your question. No, 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 no. First, after you research the topic, you have to write a hypothesis. A hypothesis is basically you guessing what you think the result of the experiment will be, but you don't write it down as I think this will happen. No, you write it like you know what's gonna happen. A formula. Formula, science. For a perfect hypothesis is if blank, then blank because blank. Let's use my battery experiment. I said, does the temperature of a battery affect how long it will last? So after doing research about how batteries work, a hypothesis for this experiment would be, if two AA batteries are used at different temperatures, then the battery in the hot temperature will not last as long because the battery's fluid will evaporate, which damages the internal structure of the battery. Oh, and spoiler alert, no, it doesn't. I put two batteries outside, two in the freezer, I let them sit, and then I plugged them into my Game Boy Advance, and they lasted the exact same amount of time. I learned nothing. So you also have to write up the materials you use for the experiment, then you have to write up the steps to do the experiment, the procedures, and you also have to write an introduction, basically just bullcrapping what you're going to do. Then you do the experiment, aka the fun part. Make sure you write down your results because you have to make a graph. You have to. How do you make a graph to show that batteries at different temperatures lasted the same amount of time? They did. You think you're done, right? But no, you gotta write up the results as if your graph didn't already perfectly depict that, and a conclusion. The conclusion is like the most insulting part of the science fair. You basically go through this checklist of questions that you answer. Was your hypothesis correct? No, my hypothesis was not correct. What mistakes could you have made in your experiment? I don't know, maybe I took the batteries out of the cold and hot and put them in a room temperature Game Boy, and in a couple of minutes they both went to a room temperature. I don't know. How can others use this information you found? What do you mean? All the batteries lasted the same. I don't think anyone is going to put their batteries in their freezer to have literally no effect. All right, and then you take everything you wrote, print it out, and then slap it onto a poster board. And everyone, and I mean everyone, would use construction paper as a border around the text to give the poster board a good aesthetic. I think the second most fun part of the science fair was choosing what word art font you would use for your title. Oh, and by the way, the teachers told us to have a creative title to catch people's attention. Like, that was part of the assignment. We got graded on the title. Basically, they were telling us to create puns for a grade. If you're doing a project that's measuring plant growth, Ready, Set, Grow, that was a very popular choice. And then everyone took their poster boards and presented it in front of the whole class. Those were the three most boring days of science ever. Except for the day you presented. That was the most stressful day. And then after all of that, everyone in the school put their poster board up in the cafeteria and, you know, then it was fun to walk around and see how other people decorated their poster board. And you could always tell whose mom helped them. So, overall, I didn't have a good time. Those 21% of people who did enjoy it, I'm glad you liked it. But me and the other 21% of people think you're huge nerds. And when I asked that Twitter question, I had some people messaging me saying, yeah, I got third place and all I had was a cup of dirt, ha 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 ha. And that made me wonder, Wait, it was a competition? So I think the key to a good science fair is to come up with a good question and also do a topic that you actually enjoy. One science fair, I did an experiment on rockets, and I had a blast. That would have been a good title. But for another year, I did What Color Light Is the Hottest? I just shined a lamp at a thermometer and switched out the bulbs. I know I'll let Neil say what he thinks about that whole project.
Okay, red light is warmer than blue light. Interesting discovery, but not exactly revolutionary.
Thanks, Neil. Yeah, just completely discredit all my research. I'm fine. So, moral of the story, if you need an idea for a science fair project, do it on rockets. You don't even need a question. Just launch model rockets.
I'm at the supermarket, gonna cop some rhubarb. I reach into my pocket, it's time to get charged. I'm paying cash and I know what happens next is strange. I flash a stunning smile and say,
you can keep the change.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. You can have that money, it's yours. And also coins are uncomfortable in my pocket. Sitting by my computer, mom comes inside the lair.
It's smelling like a sewer, you should go get some air.
I'm getting up and stretch, I'm filling up with pride. I open up the door and put a
single foot outside.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I leave my house, so help me. I'm gonna put my foot back inside of my house now. My lifestyle's quite unhealthy, I snacked recording this. Got an expanding belly, can't find a shirt that fits. From my chair to the kitchen, from my snack bowl to the brim. Yeah, I know that might look bad, but then I
sign up for a gym.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I'm a gym member, don't get ripped. And I will go there sometime, I just haven't decided on a date yet. I'm chilling out in class, my teacher's such a jerk. And suddenly he asks,
where is your homework?
All my friends in panic, no, is that today? I slap mine on the desk and say,
I'm gonna get an A.
Plus. Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I do my homework, model student. Turns out I plagiarized and now I'm in detention. My mom is back again.
Can you take out the trash?
Her mind was blown right then.
I did it before you asked.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I do my chores for my man. Couldn't find a trash can, so I dumped it in the ocean. It's just a regular day, or is it grandma? No, someone's changing age and it isn't grandpa. Other grandsons may just write on Facebook walls, but I am grandma's special boy, so
I'm gonna call.
Oh, what? Oh yeah, I'm a good person. I remember birthdays. For example, February 7th. You better think of me when you're drafting up your will. I'm hanging out with Quinston, he is the coolest guy. Got 30k on Insta, always wear suit and tie. I'll tell him about how good I am, but he says,
bro, the people who are really good don't brag about it though.
What? You're saying that bragging about all the nice things you've done misses the whole point of doing nice things in the first place?
Oh, what? Am I a good person? I don't brag ever, never did. Now please excuse me while I go delete my Twitter!
Oh, and I gotta delete this song. Wait, it's already on YouTube and Spotify? Well, hopefully no one will listen to it. Guys, I have a brilliant idea. What if we do the In My Feelings Challenge? What do you think?
What's the In My Feelings Challenge?
It was that dance people did outside of their moving cars in 2018.
That's stupid.
I know! It's weird to me that YouTube Rewind 2018 came out over 5 years ago, which makes it old enough to be something to reminisce about. There's a fresh generation of iPad kids who don't get to experience the yearly tradition of coming together as a community and watching the newest YouTube Rewind. And absolutely hating it. In case you all forgot, the website YouTube.com used to make these celebratory videos showcasing all the important events and memes that had happened throughout the year. And all these YouTubers would get together and do a silly little dance, and everyone had a grand old time. And since these videos were produced by the very platform you're currently watching this on, Rewinds would always receive a lot of attention. Now, according to my memory, YouTube Rewinds were pretty well received. At first. But you see, as time went on, the general public and the YouTubers involved started to grow weary. People were throwing around words like cringe, and this isn't what YouTube represents, and that's that. And it all accumulated to YouTube's magnum opus, YouTube Rewind 2018. Everyone controls Rewind. Hashtag YouTube Rewind, which is a video that was so universally hated that it holds the world record for most disliked video ever. A record it will now hold perpetually because of the whole dislike thing. The audience wasn't happy, the YouTubers involved weren't happy, until finally YouTube snapped and was like, alright, fine, if no one wants it, we'll stop doing it. We were just doing this as a favor anyways. And so YouTube discontinued the Rewind project indefinitely, with 2018 being the last time we ever got a Rewind.
What about me, James?
How dare you even consider yourself worthy of being called a Rewind 2019? A top 10 video? Really? At least 2011 had Rebecca Black hosting. Leave 2019 before I tell you the top 10 ways on how I'm gonna hurt you! So getting back to the actual last YouTube Rewind, you know, the one with the most dislikes in the whole world, if we skip to 3 minutes and 2 seconds into that video, we see...
Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge!
Oh, geez. That's me. I know I'm a little late to the party, but since we've all had enough time to grow and reflect as people, I would like to finally share some of my thoughts and experiences working on YouTube Rewind 2018. The first thing I want to talk about is how none of the YouTubers involved got any type of monetary compensation. At least none of the ones I talked to did. This was a big issue that a lot of other YouTubers had in their expose videos, but I personally was not bothered by it. Was I getting paid in exposure? Yes. In fact, I actually lost money doing this because I had to get my friend Rush to animate some of the scenes, so I, you know, paid him for his work. But what I'm trying to tell you is that as much as I'm about to complain about YouTube Rewind, don't feel any sort of empathy for me, okay? I did this to myself. I think the best piece of advice I could give you is that if YouTube ever reaches out to you and is like, hey, do you want to be a part of Rewind? You should say, let me read the script first. But I didn't know that in 2018. And I also didn't know that in 2017. If you look at YouTube Rewind 2017 and watch all the way to the end, keep going. Right there in the credits is me and Jaden doing a floss in space. It was a lot cooler back then. They also wanted all the animators to animate our characters in the middle of a jello fight, and I think they wanted to put our cartoon characters over footage of real-life YouTubers in the middle of a jello fight, but they gave us no direction, and I don't think they ever filmed a scene where they were like, okay, real-life YouTubers, remember to leave that spot empty because that's where the animated guy's gonna go. Because, you know, they gotta plan that kind of stuff out ahead of time, right? So instead, they just threw our unusable animated jello fight with no background at the very end as this extremely out-of-place post-credit scene. So 2017 was pretty uneventful for me. Like, yeah, I was in YouTube Rewind, but, you know, I was in the credits. Who's going to stick around and watch the credits, you know? But 2018 was going to be my year. Rewind wanted me back, and this time they were giving me a speaking role. Holy shit! My line was going to be, Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. And then the YouTuber Swoozy, who would be in his real-life human form, would say, right? And then we'd fist bump Who Framed Roger Rabbit style. So do you remember that trend in 2018 where people were doing that dance outside of their moving car? Well, apparently, that was called the In My Feelings challenge. Back in 2018, I didn't even know it was called that. I thought it was called stupid. Now, if you've at all watched YouTube Rewind 2018, Everyone Controls Rewind, hashtag YouTube Rewind, you might be wondering why, after I specifically suggest we do the In My Feelings challenge, that not a single YouTuber or talk show host can be seen dancing outside of a moving vehicle. That's because YouTube didn't want to promote unsafe behavior. So they didn't want to show anyone dancing outside of a car. So they weren't really doing the challenge then, were they? YouTube, if you don't want to promote unsafe behavior, don't promote the In My F***ing Feelings challenge. Kids are still going to look up the In My Feelings challenge and then watch multiple videos of people dancing outside of cars on YouTube.
We don't want to promote unsafe behavior.
It's on your platform, dog. You know, looking back, that should have been my first red flag, but I was still optimistic. I was so excited to be a part of this huge project, and I knew there were going to be a bunch of YouTubers involved, but I was going to be one of the few animated ones. I was going to stand out. I was going to be the odd one out. Knowing how Rewind handled animation in 2017, when they asked me to be a part of 2018, I told them, hey, love the line, but I think it would be a good idea if we met in person, you know, and that way you can show me everything you're planning, and I can ask you all the right questions. And they agreed and invited me to visit the set the day they were filming Swoozy's line. So I was there, physically behind the camera, when Swoozy said, right? And then fist bumped nothing. I got to experience what it was like to be on a real film set with actors and directors and costumes and catering and makeup, and it was a lot, honestly, for just one line. And maybe it was because they had booked Swoozy for a full hour, but they had this beautiful man say, right? And then fist bump nothing no less than 50 times. It's one line, guys. I think we got it. And then after, like, take 87, my stomach sank when the director said, okay, Swoozy, how about you try saying, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. Wait a minute. That's my line. Are we changing it? Which line am I animating now? Do you want me to do both, just like how you got Swoozy to do both? And what, oh, you'll pick your favorites? I asked the director right there which line was I animating, and he said he was going to let me know. And then we went outside and filmed Swoozy dance in front of a brick wall, and which parts of him dancing was I going to animate my guy next to? He said he was going to let me know that too. So I took all the information I learned that day and referred it back to the other animators. What they wanted were two shots. They wanted 5 seconds of our characters dancing, and they wanted another shot of all of us sitting around a campfire singing horribly. After doing some quick math, I realized that if all 7 of us animators did a 5-second dance, that would be 35 seconds of cartoons dancing, which for a YouTube Rewind would be a lot of screen time. I had a sinking feeling that they weren't going to be using our full 5-second clips, and they didn't even let me know. Now, for my life-changing speaking role, I had to record my line on my own, which normally wouldn't be a problem. But in late 2018, I had just moved to California, and I didn't have my own setup set up. And to make the whole situation worse, I was only given 1 week to finish my animation and record my line. So, you know, the clock was ticking. Now, I think the second best piece of advice I could give you is that if you're ever in need of a quick jerry-rigged sound booth, go into your closet and hide under a comforter. In fact,
hello, real-life human James here, coming to you on a Blue Yeti inside of a bathroom. The acoustics in here are terrible. Could you imagine voicing a cartoon character in this? Guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, it doesn't work. Now.
All right, and now we're here inside of our makeshift sound booth, and you can hopefully hear the quality change right away, you know, like, guys, let's do the In My Feelings challenge. See, you know, we don't need expensive sound booths to have a good time. But back in 2018, I wanted the most important line in my career to be recorded in a professional sound booth. Luckily, I was in luck. You see, California is one of the few places home to something called a YouTube space.
A YouTube space advertises itself as a place to aid content creators, providing them with facilities to create content for their YouTube channels. And to access said facilities, you needed at least 10,000 subscribers. A little weird they put a number on it, but I get it. I had just moved to California. I knew I was going to be hitting this place up all the time. When I first went to the YouTube space, I didn't call ahead or set up an appointment or anything because there wasn't an option to do so on the website. But I figured they would have to help me out, right? The line I needed to record was for a YouTube Rewind. And you're a YouTube space! Like, Susan personally asked me to be here, you know? So I drove an hour to the space, I went inside, showed them my sub count, and they said that in order to use the facilities, I had to fill out all these forms on my computer back home. But it's for a YouTube Rewind. Then I drove another hour back home and started filling out the forms, but by the time I got to the quizzes, I realized, I think this wild goose chase is probably going to take longer than a week to resolve. With time running out, I gingerly asked my new friend Aaron if I could use his setup, and he said yes, and I didn't even have to show him my sub count. I mean, I showed him anyway, though. So the line you hear me say in the 2018 Rewind was recorded in the Game Grumps office, which I think means, at the very least, Game Grumps deserves to be credited in the description of Rewind. Come on, YouTube! They were the only ones who took me in when your own company turned me away! The deadline was fast approaching. I mean, it was fast approaching as soon as I got it, but I've been in crunch mode before, and I'm sure the nameless video editors were just trying to hit their impossibly tight deadlines too. I reminded myself what I was making all of these sacrifices for. Everyone was going to unanimously love this video and what it represents and look up my channel afterwards and subscribe. December 6th, 2018, a day that changed history. It was raining that day, and the world was exposed to what YouTube had been cooking up. And they all collectively hated it. Like, a lot. Like, to the point where I would be lucky if I didn't lose subscribers. I think the audience knew that none of the YouTubers involved had any say in the creative process. We were just reading our lines from YouTube script, you know? So at least I get to say I'm in the most disliked video in history, and no one's too mad at me. Right? So was all of this stress worth it? No. I got paid in exposure, and the exposure was overwhelmingly negative. In fact, I think Rewind was only positive for one other YouTuber. Do you have any guesses? Jaden motherfucking Animations pulled off the biggest prank of 2018. One of the reasons people disliked 2018's Rewind was because PewDiePie, the number one YouTuber at the time, wasn't included. But Jaden, being the genius that she is, knew he wasn't going to be included again, so she snuck in a PewDiePie reference into her 5-second dance, and no one caught it, and it made the final cut. Jaden was crowned the least cringy part of Rewind, and everyone loved her, and she got a big boost in subscribers, and all I gotta say to that is, good job, Jaden. How are you enjoying that cake and eating it, too? Now, there are a lot of valid reasons why people disliked 2018's Rewind. One of them being that the video starts out with Will Smith? He's not a YouTuber. But they didn't seem to mind when 2016 started out with The Rock and 2017 started with The Colbert Show, but whatever. And I don't know if you remember what YouTube was like in 2018, but it was in the news a couple of times, you know, over a few small things. However, with all of that being said, I do genuinely miss YouTube Rewinds. Getting to wake up and go, wow, it's December and a new YouTube Rewind just dropped. I'm going to watch it. And then I get to see a handful of YouTubers I recognize do a dance and not recognize any of the other YouTubers. And then I get to see the rest of the internet's reaction to it. It's better than Christmas for me. Even if it's the cringiest video ever, we still all watched it together as a community. And I think that's what I miss the most, when YouTube felt more like a community. As long as it's not a top 10 video, I welcome back YouTube Rewinds with open arms. And if they do make a comeback, I don't think I'd want to be a part of them. Not because I got burned in 2018, but because I wouldn't want to rob another ignorant YouTuber of the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be taken advantage of and work for free and be a part of history. For now, we just have to live with the 9 rewinds we do have. But if you're like me and are just dying to see more YouTube Rewind content, and I know you are because you're still here, I've discovered a pretty massive Easter egg. In the description of Rewind 2018 is a link to See All the Easter Eggs. And for your viewing pleasure are 13 brand new shorts that I can only describe as skits that were edited together with existing Rewind footage. I don't think that's what an Easter egg is. They're not that funny and are pretty hard to watch, but isn't that what Rewind's all about? Have a good night.
Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Don't you ever say, cause I want you.
And I need you.
And I want you.
And I want you.
Don't you ever hey.
Oh, that's
that. I don't know the rest of the words.
Oh, that's that.
All right, I think we got it. Here's a little social interaction life hack I've discovered. If you're meeting someone new and you want to get to know them better, and you see any semblance of a tattoo peeking out of their sleeve, compliment it. If that person doesn't want to talk about their tattoos, they'll say, "Oh, thank you." Anyway, this is my stop. But if they do want to talk about their tattoos, their face will light up and then they'll do the rest of the talking. I realize that by giving you this advice, now anytime I compliment someone else's tattoos, it will seem disingenuous. But it's not, most of the time. I love all of your tattoos. That's right, I'm talking to you. I love your tattoos, dude. Whether it's how you got the tattoo, the meaning behind the tattoo, or being a tattoo of something you like, every tattoo is a story. And most people love telling stories about themselves. I wouldn't know anything about that, personally. I never understood why some people liked talking about their tattoos until I got one of my own. What, you think I'm gonna make a whole video about tattoos when I didn't even have any? That's right, I'm a marked man, Mom. What are you gonna do about it? Stop unconditionally loving me? Yeah, right. Wait, what are you doing with that cheese grater? Okay, but in all seriousness, can you make sure Grandma doesn't see this video, Mom? I don't want to upset her on the way out. Back in the day, tattoos used to be a symbol of rebellion and meant you couldn't get a job. No regrets, baby! But I feel like tattoos are getting more and more accepted, if not expected. I'll see a jacked, bald guy covered in tattoos and think, okay, yeah, he was meant to look like that. For me, the idea of being a badass tattooed guy with a sketch pad and a beanie and ripped jeans and a beaded bracelet always seemed cool to me.